Mike, could you tell us just something about your background, where you're from, how you came over, you went to school, how you chose your profession?
Grew up in London, went to grammar school, was good at a lot of subjects, had no idea what I wanted to do, was good at science and sort of didn't like it. Somehow got talked into doing medicine. I was bitten by Sigmund Freud just about when I was supposed to decide what sort of career direction, and that basically decided me to go into medicine, although I wasn't, I mean, I was told it was not a sensible career path and that Freud was not very well regarded in the country I lived in. I still decided to go into medicine because it seemed to have a wide range of possible directions. I thought I could be some kind of organic chemist or geneticist or a Freudian analyst, depending on what sort of worked out. And I also wondered about acupuncture. I was sort of very lost, really. And just got through medicine by the skin of my teeth, hating it, but somehow managing to do it. Partway through, well, I would say halfway through, I was more and more interested in Freud and thought about bailing out of the medical training and just doing a psychoanalytic training. But within 2 years of that, the sort of 60s opened up and I came across Lange and David Cooper. I suppose also I was looking for some sort of salvation. I mean, I liked Freud because he seemed to make it clear that the reality I was being persuaded to live in my family and really at medical school, and I mean, I got married quite young and sensed that everything was not very real. And Freud's theory that there was something completely outrageous and quite other going on under the surface really rang true, so I was very much bitten by Freud. But then I kind of switched allegiances and got much more interested in Jean-Paul Sartre, who seemed to have more respect for the kind of density of what people actually live in. And so I was gradually drifting away from Freud. When I found out there were these psychiatrists or psychoanalysts who took Sartre seriously and took the kind of actual struggles that people go through in the sort of life that they're living, I kind of jumped ship and left Freud behind. Got sort of seduced into the psychedelic movement because, I mean, at first I just thought drugs are an escape from reality. I can't believe how sort of very old I was in my early 20s. I just thought drugs was an escape from reality. What rubbish. I thought that the hippie sort of underground staying up all night and dancing and getting stoned was infantile. There was a big event in 1967 called the Dialectics of Liberation Congress, where there was Lange and Cooper, there was Stokely Carmichael, there were kind of revolutionaries, black power, family therapists, pretentious people of all kinds, and refugees from the Vietnam War in bright coloured shirts, all kinds of stuff, which completely thrilled me because it was the first time something was going on in the culture that, I mean, they took Sartre seriously. I went to a little seminar where I realised you could take that sort of stuff too seriously, sitting around talking phenomenology, and I thought, no. But that was a kind of, that was where I began to feel I had a direction. There was then an anti-University of London set up in the wake of that. I was very involved in that in the months coming up to my medical finals. There was also this talk of revolution, which people were absolutely serious about and absolutely believed was going to happen. And it wasn't a sort of boring economic revolution. It was a cultural revolution, and people were going to be free and wonderful and love each other and creative. And it was going to happen next week. And I felt I was almost, I mean, there was another narrative going on at the same time, which is everything's going to go up in flames, there's going to be a war in South Africa, and the fascist pigs will draft us to South Africa to prop up the regime. Absolute nonsense. I mean, I can't believe, looking back, what rubbish we all believed. But I now understand that Harold Wilson at that time was in an incredible double paranoid. I mean, he was actually being shadowed by MI6, some of whom believed that he was in the pay of the Soviet communists. Paranoia was the state of the art in the 1960s. So everybody was wrong, as far as I can see, and we were all crazy. And perhaps the little clique that I was in was not that much crazier than any of the others. But we were saying there is salvation in madness, and people called schizophrenic are actually tapping into some deep wisdom that's coming out crazy to start with, but just trust it. So there was a lot of that going on. Somehow or other that links up with Charlotte sort of 6 years later, and maybe that will come out.
Kingsley Hall, and then it's Mary Barnes going into madness, using madness as a route back into sanity through the process, which is a route that opens people up to anything being therapeutic, almost anything becoming, any extreme experience
and
being a therapeutic.
It now turns out...
Leads you to Charlotte?
Well, indirectly, yeah. I mean, reading R.D. Lang and his memories of the time, he thought everybody was fucking crazy. He's always saying this now, although he was the sort of doyen of the... Are we not supposed to say that word? Or is it was in quotes anyway. and he said it a lot. Everybody was supposed to be willing to do anything, and we were very indiscriminate about where we were willing to go and how much we were willing to unhinge each other. And Lang, in retrospect, although he seemed to be the sort of darling of the people who were saying we must go mad, we must go out of our minds in order to discover ourselves, he was very disapproving of the kind of chaotic sort of... very self-obsessed and selfish kind of frivolous stuff that was going on, and people not actually trying to build relationships or build any coherent reality at all. So he sort of disowned that movement and pretended, or perhaps it was always true, he didn't really feel very much in harmony with it. I was certainly encouraged to progressively lose my grip on common sense, I would say. And I went through some sort of unhinged experience over a year.
What year?
This is 1969. I kind of conveniently completed my medical degree, and I did the interning, what you call in America interning, and we call junior house jobs. So I kind of got my degree safely parked. Sort of arising out of our commune and the kind of complicated relationships and the jealousies and I'm not quite sure what you'd say, intoxications, I suppose. I sort of steadily lost my grip on reality as we now would call it, but felt that I was actually going into realms that I needed to go into. So I was sort of, I suppose, enacting the sort of trip that Lang and Cooper were talking about. I would say in retrospect, and an awful lot of people did that because it was the thing to do. And I tend to think that what I did was something that I couldn't help once I'd been given permission and was in a commune where people would somewhat protect you from immediate medical opinion, let's say. So I went through quite a lot of sort of deep crisis and confusion and lostness.
Was that the state you were in when you met Charlotte?
No. I'm talking really 1969. You said, when was it? It was just as I completed the medical stuff, and I just took some time out to get more involved in my community, which I thought was preparing for the revolution. So this is the year 1969 through 70. And a lot of Charlotte's themes very clearly came up for me. And I mean, I remember particularly at one point, completely out of my head, but also feeling there's some journey that has to be made. And there's something that has to be discovered, and it has to do with sex and power and dominance and submission. And it all makes much more sense than anybody knows. I mean, in my state of being out of my head, I was also asking, well, why would I suddenly see this? And it seemed to me that because I couldn't live the reality that I had been in and had somehow got tripped into having to be lost in this way, it seemed to me that I had some sort of insight into some... I'm trying to think what words. It's very hard because, I mean, this isn't a word thing. It's a kind of being lost and feeling one's way.
Well, what state were you in by the time you met Charlotte? What sort of, you said the questions...
Okay, I went through this stuff, and a lot of what I would retrospectively see as Charlotte themes, including the whole Chinese philosophy and the yin and yang and the philosophy of the Tao, all of this stuff was kind of there. And I lost track of it. I couldn't handle it. I mean, I eventually was sectioned and spent just a week, no, 2 weeks, under compulsory psychiatric order and continued to be lost in this way. But I mean, in my sense of it, I was trying to find a path, so I didn't worry and was very happy to do this. Eventually, gradually kind of retuned to 1970 and got on with my life. Charlotte came along for me about 5 years later, where I'd been hammering away at the Tao Te Ching and trying to follow up these insights I'd had, but could really not make sense of it, and had put it on hold. I'd done some work in mainstream psychiatry, which during my time with the kind of anti-psychiatry movement, it never crossed my mind I would do mainstream psychiatry. I'd done some of that, found I was actually good at it and got on with the clientele and with the nursing staff and could cope with fellow medical staff. So all that had happened. I saw Charlotte's ad in Time Out, which was saying, human ethology is the scientific discipline of tomorrow, get in on the ground floor. I saw this probably 6 weeks running and thought, oh, go away. One weekend I saw this diagram and realized this diagram is what I was trying to draw 5 years before. Why had I ignored this, even though it's naff? And so I immediately sent a check and got this extraordinary piece of writing called What is Human Ethology About, which just made my hair stand on end. As soon as I started to read it, I thought, my God, she's grappling with things which other people just talk their way out of. I was very distressed by behaviorism and the kind of physiological talk that would reduce us to some sort of robotic, conditioned complex. And the beginning of this piece of writing by Charlotte, she clearly knocks all the foundations away from that and gets somehow on much more intelligent lines right from the start. There's this talk about spatial orientation and temporal orientation, which just rang a bell, and I just thought, well, no wonder. If I'm in a spatially oriented frame, I can't even think these things. So her writing enabled me to start thinking about things which I'd had to leave behind. I mean, I knew they weren't completely crazy, but I hadn't been able to hang in with them. Once I started reading Charlotte, I thought, well, I have to go to one of these seminars, and immediately found there was 2,000 pages was the real What is Human Ethology About. So I just knew that I was in there and would have to read it until I could get the hang of it. Some of it was very abstruse, difficult and strange. But it rang so many bells right from the start. Even when it seemed very crazy, I thought, I have to get in here deep enough that I know what is crazy about it. I cannot ignore it. So I just started reading these 2,000 pages and gradually realized more and more how it rang bells with the stuff that I had. I mean, I could now kind of retrospectively understand. I'd been researching in my own way the confusions and craziness that we were all living in. And I was willing to be the one in our commune that went crazy. But it was actually everybody's contradictions. And here was a theory about human nature that says we are run by contradiction. This is why we're the way we are, because we have a contradiction built into our makeup. I couldn't ignore that. And I just had to go with it as far as it went, really.
What was your first impression about Charlotte, and where did you see her? Did you describe the room?
It was called the Kirkman Batch College of Human Ethology, and there were all these Chinese diagrams all around, and a lot of sort of rather formal people. I already thought, well, I understand what this is all about, you know, so I was quite surprised that she didn't sort of immediately recognise that I was somebody who understood it. And I felt a bit sort of miffed. I mean, she was larger than life, no doubt about it. Quite strange. I do take people at face value, and it never entered my mind that she wasn't what she presented herself as, which was an eccentric, sort of glamorized, but not attractive, but sort of very charismatic, strange person. I don't know what... I think I realised as she started to talk about the stuff that she was just possessed by it, that she couldn't stop talking about it. When people asked her questions, she would just go from one place to another. It would always be interesting. I think she probably answered the questions by the skin of her teeth, but it was almost like the material was more powerful than she was, and she was almost lost in it. But it was obviously powerful stuff, and I mean, on the strength of meeting her, I didn't have any hesitation in buying the 7-volume study because I just had to find out more.
Did you have any signals at all that there was something amiss about her?
Oh, definitely amiss. But I'm used to people being amiss. Most people are amiss. I'm amiss, you know. I found when I started reading her that she thought so too. So, and I mean, she was strange, but I mean, I must have suspected something in an unthought way, but I think I'm very kindly and a bit of a sap, I think is probably the expression, a bit soft. And I think I sense what people don't want me to think about. And unless it's in my face, or unless they mess me about, I seem to not go to places people don't want me to. I sensed, I mean, once I got to know her, I sensed that she wanted to be sort of liked or loved. And I was distressed that I didn't have a kind of physical response to her of affection or any sort of sexual desire. And that distressed me. It didn't enter my mind at any conscious level that she wasn't a woman. And
were you surprised when you discovered she was? How did you feel? Did you feel deceived?
Completely. I mean, shocked and shattered. And I mean, going back to it, I think it's partly that I could have been so deceived, and also that she could have being so deceptive, because I did have one experience where she was talking to me about the Xu Qing, the Chinese Book of History. I'd asked some question that excited me, and she started showing me this stuff in this book and saying, well, of course, this, and pointing to diagrams. And I suddenly got this flash or this kind of sudden intuition that she was completely bullshitting. And it was a shock. And I thought, you're just making this up. Mostly, what she said was so interesting, I wouldn't have cared whether she was bullshitting or not, because I had to know where it went. And the Chinese stuff was just incredibly interesting. And it fitted with so much of what I'd been trying to think out 6 years before. But I didn't question her. That was the only time her integrity sort of really came into question for me. And I do feel I was naive. I still am. I now realise it's one of my strategies for coping with people, that I take them at face value. Unless something really bugs me, then I start asking whatever questions I need to ask. But it seems extraordinarily naive. Well, she said, I mean, she has a theory about cross-gender. She very confidently claimed to be a female. She, by implication, was obviously very masculine at very deep levels and very feminine at deep levels. I mean, that's how you would have to read her according to her theory. In some sense, what gender she actually was almost was private, and I wasn't invited there. And she didn't flirt with me, which I understand, having read Colin's stuff and a lot of what other people have said. She flirted quite outrageously with people. I don't know why she didn't flirt with me, but she didn't.
When you had moments, of, say, skepticism, or moments maybe you might have felt dissent, different. How did she respond?
Say again?
When you had moments in which you differed from her,
yeah.
How did she respond? If indeed you expressed that.
Right.
What I'm really driving at here is cult leader. Was she dogmatic? Was she...
Not at all, no. I mean, the most powerful experience I had was when I'd been reading her stuff for about 6 months, and gradually things falling into place, and I started writing completely wild stuff, putting across her theories as if I were somebody out of Ken Kesey electric Kool-Aid acid test. I kind of found this persona who was a bit like Randall McMurphy. He's in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. He's the sane one. But kind of straight from the shoulder, I've got the answer to all this shit, you guys, and I'm going to lay it on you. And I started expressing her theory in my own terms, in a way which anybody who was struggling with her would have said, where on earth is this coming from? But I was very excited by it, and I showed it to her. It made no attempt to... It didn't name her. It made no attempt to key into her vocabulary. It was quite inspired. And I just really wanted to know what she made of it. And she came back about a week later and said, this is absolute bloody genius, carry on, sort of thing. And no, she didn't, I mean, she never... So I didn't really have to take issue about stuff. I mean, stuff I didn't understand, I would ask questions about. It was always on a slightly different plane. There wasn't anything very much to argue with. I would sit with stuff if stuff didn't make sense. I mean, sometimes I think, well, this is completely crazy. But I would sit with it. I also didn't actually want to follow it as some sort of set of ideas or dogma. I mean, I was excited by it and felt that I had to get into it, as I said before, as deeply as was necessary for me to get the hang of it.
Did you ever have the sense that she wanted to make a disciple of you?
No. Not at all.
What about the other people? What was your impression of the other people who were there? In terms of disciple material?
It wasn't really like that. She was more of a kind of flamboyant sort of show-off, telling all this wild, very intellectual, complex, convoluted stuff. She was getting off on it. She obviously liked to hold people in thrall, But she wasn't trying to convert them at all, and she didn't seem to want them to submit to anything whatsoever. I mean, I didn't know the con artist story, so I didn't know that he had been a con man, a very good one, for 25 years. But I'm sure he knew how to play people and how to feed them, and sort of give them what they wanted. But he was more like a showman, I mean, than a cult leader. People weren't expected to follow, and she didn't expect me to follow. And I mean, I do think that nearly everybody else I met, no, this isn't true, some people were just interested, some people were kind of very caught up in it. No, everybody was getting what they wanted from it. I mean, Don loved that he could be, whatever he called himself, a sadomasochistic queer, I think was his own label. And he loved that he had a place in the map of evolution, and he was actually important, and that he was in on the ground floor. He loved it. And I don't think she didn't... I mean, so they were in a very tight sort of symbiotic relationship. He spent lots and lots of time writing with her.
What did you carry away from that you found lasting from your contact with Charlotte?
I was able to think out my own stuff, and I couldn't have done that, as far as I know. I mean, I don't know how long it would have taken me, because other people weren't saying what she was saying. And I think it actually enabled me, it was almost like a sort of inadvertent therapy, it enabled me to watch movies with much more openness and curiosity. I wasn't trying to apply the theory. I mean, my strategy with reading her was to just try and get as much the hang of it as I possibly could, soak myself in it, and then just put it away. And I'd watch movies, I'd read novels, I'd hang out with people, and it would ring bells without me trying. So, I think it actually enabled me to be more receptive, because I didn't have any other theories cluttering my head up, and her theory didn't clutter my head up. I just put it away. But I'd be watching a Hollywood movie and suddenly see the dance that was going on and think, my God, that's exactly what she's talking about. But the influence was I was more free to watch the movie and be with the characters. And then it was ringing bells. It freed me.
Did it help you in your profession as a psychiatrist, as well as a human being, to have gone through?
I think I was on my own path with this profession, which was basically I just hung out with the patients and tried to conform to the system requirements of the system. So I tried to deliver what the system required, which was a written history, blood tests, a diagnosis, which I didn't believe in. I mean, I was a sort of practicing ultra-Langian who decided there was no point in fighting the system. So I was just in the system, trying to keep my head clear. I would think, so I mean, I did about 6 months of that and came across Charlotte's stuff when I was in the middle of that 6 months, now I come to think of it. I think that Charlotte's theory gave me